Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. Donald Trump has said he is very angry and beep off with Russian President Vladimir Putin after weeks of attempting to negotiate a ceasefire with Ukraine. Now, the Kremlin has been very swift in responding that no, they are still working with the US and no, they're not fazed by those comments. On the line with us is Dr. Terence McNamee, who is going to help us understand what is about to also happen with this Liberation Day. Dr. McNamee, thank you so much for your time.
Good to be with you again.
Let's maybe start with the Russia-US, I'm not sure if it's a back and forth, but the Kremlin has already responded. Do you think, you know, Russia is downplaying what Trump was saying?
Well, it's difficult to say. I think what we're seeing now is acute frustration on the part of Donald Trump. He's just grappling with reality, because before he became president, he said he could sort this war out
in a day,
that there would be peace. And, whatever he meant by that, he is certainly starting to understand better the real limits of American power in leveraging an end to this war. So Trump stands to lose a lot of credibility if he cannot manage a ceasefire, let alone a lasting peace. And he has staked a lot of his reputation on securing this. So I think that is really the important context to understand this kind of lashing out that we have seen in the last 24 hours.
And do you think you will go ahead then with tariffs for those who are purchasing oil from Russia?
You know, as Canada's foreign minister described it once, this is a kind of psychodrama. The change is on the day. I mean, Liberation Day is supposed to be, what, Wednesday, the 2nd of April? He didn't want that to be on April 1st.
Yeah.
I would certainly tell your listeners to watch out for some very convincing April Fool's jokes tomorrow, because we simply don't know in terms of what's going to happen with tariffs. He said as much as 50% on Russian oil. Then he seemed to backtrack a little bit on that. Now, the markets are unequivocal. They hate this. They have absolutely had it with all this erratic tariff stuff. So we'll see. It seems to be an ethos of his, this idea of a kind of global tariff regime. But if the markets continually give negative signals, if the United States slips into recession, then maybe we'll have to really dial it back on this kind of stuff.
You know, they keep really pushing the boundaries a bit here. And his conversation earlier on, when he was speaking on NBC around a third term, the idea that, no, I'm joking, no, I'm not joking, this is the second time he refers to this so-called joke. I mean, what's really possible? He would need a two-thirds majority, I beg your pardon. He owns, you know, the Democrats own the Senate and so on, but they don't have the two-thirds majority. What would be possible?
Okay, so there's quite a lot to unpack on this latest sort of three-term possibility. In my own view, what I think Trump is trying to do, he recognizes that in some respects, his power is already draining away from him. It's already receding because he is, in the parlance, a lame duck president. So if he adheres to the law and the law is not changed, that means he has to exit in January of 2029. And from now until then, his ability to impose his will on the political landscape, it lessens. However, if he injects some uncertainty into this whole equation, if he keeps people guessing that he's got something up his sleeve, then maybe he will continue to be around, then this could actually be a method of his to shore up his own power. But on your question, and we can, you know, talk a lot about that, essentially, we're talking about in the United States what's called the 22nd Amendment, right? And the 22nd Amendment, it was ratified in 1951, and that limits American presidents to two terms. And it has often been challenged by presidents in the past, but no president has taken the step of actually legally pursuing this. So this isn't unprecedented what he's doing. But the bar is so high as to be in this political environment almost insurmountable. You mentioned what's required in the Congress, but the big thing is that it has to be ratified by three quarters of the states, three quarters of the state legislatures, which is simply impossible in this political environment because I think maybe nearly 20 of them are controlled by Democrats. So it's an impossible hurdle, but there's a lot of legal experts are talking about a few other different loopholes he may have.
So he obviously speaks of scenarios that his supporters have put forward. It's actually quite scary when you think of what they are alluding to, the idea that, yeah, maybe, you know, Vance will take the position of president and then quickly resign, allowing him, if he is the deputy, his deputy, then stepping in. So, I mean, that in itself is quite scary, is it not?
It is, and that's obviously that resonates because, of course, that's what his, strongman friend in quotation marks, Vladimir Putin did in Russia to stay in power when he put Medvedev in as vice president. So he didn't actually change the constitution. However, in the United States, they do have something called, if I got to remember, the 12th Amendment. Now, remember, this complicates the loophole because essentially it says that you are constitutionally ineligible for the office of the president, sorry, for vice president, if you cannot be eligible for the office of president, right? So essentially, he couldn't go down that route. But what legal experts are saying is that does that make Trump explicitly ineligible to serve as president or only to be elected as president? So this is one of the games that are going on at the moment. But I should say that things could change, but I don't think there's much of an appetite to really demolish that norm in American politics of a president's trying to stay on in this manner.
You've obviously been watching how South Africa is attempting to deal with Washington. There are now speculations around the fact that Trump or the US is planning on setting up some camps for white South Africans who are intending to move to the US, sort of like a holding kind of camp. Just your thoughts on how, I'd say, how slowly we're moving in trying to repair our relations. And today, the former president, Thabo Mbeki, mentioned the fact that, you know, we need to be quite careful about diplomacy with the US. But what is possible in the current environment?
So, I agree with Thabo Mbeki, what he said 100%. I cannot quite understand, because they had enough time to do this, why Ramaphosa didn't put some restrictions on Ambassador Rasool when he came back. It kind of makes no sense to me, given what his job was, which was simply to represent South Africa's national interest in Washington. It wasn't to be an activist. You're there to represent your country's interests in countries that have leaders who you may not agree with what they're doing, or they may indeed be doing very bad things, but that's irrelevant. I mean, you have sort of one job to do. So that surprises me. And I think this really is a sort of nation-building moment for South Africa. I think that a lot of forces are coming into the vacuum. So I see Solidarity and Afriforum. They're occupying the space where they're trying to normalize conversations that even a few years ago might have been verboten, in South Africa, in terms of one person, one vote, the deal that was struck in 1994. And let's face it, they're doing it quite cleverly. They're doing it by gaining different constituencies who, and where their arguments are resonating. And I think that this is really a point to reaffirm what sort of post-1994 South Africa is about. I mean, South Africa can't control what's going on in Washington. It can't control initiatives like this sort of refugee camp thing, which I think to most sensible people is totally absurd and probably will not be taken up except for maybe a few symbolic people. But the idea that they would be permitted to go to the United States on the basis of a perception, whereas how many people who are genuinely facing persecution aren't allowed in the United States at the moment, particularly from elsewhere in Africa. So I think this really is an important moment for South Africa. It's an important moment for national leadership to stand up. And I hope the president recognizes that.
Although whether one person goes there or not, just symbolically, the setting up of this refugee camp by the US is in itself quite something.
It is. I mean, if we're to believe what's being said, there's even sort of soft infrastructure being set up, in Pretoria and office and that stuff. But I mean, let's face it. I mean, we haven't thrown out completely our common sense. And, how is it going to be the case where the argument is made? I mean, I saw a wonderful graph today that listed the number of deaths of people driving Teslas compared to farm murders. And whereas the Tesla deaths were like way higher, at least in 20, So I think we just sort of have to not rise to provocation, stick to the facts, stick to the evidence. And, even the sort of biggest supporters of what's going on in terms of Afriforum and solidarity, none of those people are saying they're going to take Donald Trump and the administration up on their offer. And that certainly says something.
So again, I'm still wondering what your thoughts are on how post Rasool's return, I'm not sure what we're doing. And maybe in itself, it's diplomacy that we shouldn't be aware of what's happening in the background. But is there a sense you get that something is going on, or are they just blue ticked, so to speak, by the US?
So as I've been saying, in writing for a while, I mean, there's only so much South Africa can do to arrest the slide in relations in the near term, in the short term. I think that other punitive measures are loading because, in the view of the Trump administration, they continually to receive ammunition. And remember, the culture wars that are going on in the United States, unfortunately for South Africa, what's going on, and particularly this Afriforum solidarity issue, it feeds so directly into those internal U.S. sort of culture wars. But I think, it is an important sign that Donald Trump has already nominated someone to be the U.S. ambassador because you remember in Trump 1.0, he took 2 years to nominate his friend Lana Marks. And then the Senate hearing for her was another year later. So she was actually only on the ground in South Africa for about a year. But the fact that sort of Trump has seized this kind of moment, already nominated someone who kind of has impeccable sort of conservative credentials, shall we say, suggests that in terms of Ramaphosa, in terms of the South African administration, if they were thinking that they could just sort of press pause, wait it out, let the dust settles, I think that's wrong. I think they do have to appoint someone fairly quickly, someone of significant stature, someone that ticks as many of the boxes as you possibly can, but nobody's going to be perfect. And I think in the near term, there's probably nothing they can do to sort of prevent what's kind of loading in terms of further. But over time, someone that has the ability to at least get it back to a kind of even level, I think that's really important. And I've already stated in another forum, I think the best candidate I see is Trevor Manuel. And I've sort of said that from the beginning.
Dr. McNamee, what do you think really is the issue here for Trump with regards to the US? What do you think is really, really behind all of this?
In terms of South Africa?
Yeah,
In terms of
in
what's
terms of
going
South
on with
Africa.
South
Yeah,
Africa?
what's he after, actually?
Okay, so we can be sometimes very naive by being logical to assume that there is a master plan and he knows exactly what kind of concessions that they want. If anyone pays even passing attention to South Africa, they will know that South Africa is not going to drop the ICJ case because its entire foreign policy, at least informed by the ANC, is sort of it's funneled into that case, right? So what are the other concessions? Well, on EWC, expropriation without compensation, similarly, I don't think there can be any mileage in terms of getting those concessions. So what does he want? Well, I think South Africa, as I said, is refracted right into the US culture wars very, very well, right? So there is some internal political gain to be seen, and I hate to sort of use this sort of language, but for white people to be seen as being persecuted, if you get my sort of drift, it feeds in quite well to sort of a domestic narrative in really, really crude terms. But in terms of exactly what he wants out of South Africa, I think probably if the South Africa can come up with some kind of attractive business or
Proposal.
resource-related deal, then maybe there's grounds to talk. But it's very difficult. If you're a South African delegation that's going to Washington, D.C., let me tell you, don't go unless you've got something to offer, because you won't get an audience and there's no point. So I think maybe in the business or in the resources space, there's nothing they can do in terms of, I think, some of the key causes for the Trump administration's anger towards South Africa, which is related to the ICJ case, which is related to sort of maybe China, was initially related to perceived closeness to Russia and the invasion of Ukraine, but that's less important now. So I think in terms of business, think in terms of resources. That's all that sort of occurs to me.
Would we be exaggerating if we say perhaps the transactional Donald Trump here is what we should be seeing rather than the guy who's more worried about our policies and values? So in other words, yes, the rhetoric is our policies and politically what we are saying and doing, but maybe it's not really about that. It's more the business transaction that you've just mentioned.
So that's a very good point, because Donald Trump is not ideologically or religiously anchored in many of the positions that are associated with him. I mean, this has been said by many people. I mean, as president, this is a platform for him. A lot of these positions are held very strongly by people who work for him, but perhaps he holds it, lightly. In terms of what's going on in his head, I mean, we don't want to sort of go there. I mean, who knows exactly what is going on? But in terms of, a kind of transactional president and addressing and dealing with that, I mean, I think South Africa, to some extent, has to sort of be as clever as it possibly can until attention starts to drift. Because they can't be so much focus on South Africa when, now remember, a lot of the world hasn't received the kind of attention that it's undoubtedly going to receive. I mean, besides Mexico, for instance, all of Latin America, minus sort of Venezuela, we sort of hear nothing. Right. Look at in terms of the Far East, in terms of Japan, in terms of Korea, in terms of China. So there'll be a lot of things to sort of take his sort of attention away from South Africa. It does seem to be a fixated point. But remember, he also doesn't have his Africa team in yet. And I think that'll help things. So once he gets his Assistant Secretary of State for Africa, and I have some ideas whom that might be, that might. The policy positions might become, how should we say, a little bit more sort of sophisticated.
Dr. Magnumi, would it really be possible for him to have all these fires going at the same time? He really has. There's Greenland, there's Canada, there's his fight with China, and all of the things that we know, Ukraine, Russia, all of that, Europe, and now us. Is it possible that he's going to hold it together with all these fires going at the same time?
Well, I mean, again, it's a really good point, and it goes to your sort of third term question. And in terms of mental acuity, I mean, if age eventually comes for all of us, and if we look back to Joe Biden, I mean, the difference between Joe Biden debating Trump in 2020
Mm.
compared to 4 years later debating him in 2024 when he was 81 was absolutely huge. And so, the Donald Trump of a year or 2 years from now may seem rather different. At the moment, he's full of beans. I mean, he looks like he's willing to go in front of the cameras
Yeah.
morning and night. And whatever your view of him is now, or his attention to detail, he certainly doesn't seem to lack the energy for the job. But like all human beings, is he going to be able to sustain this? Particularly as, I mean, let's face it, he's certainly making a lot more adversaries than friends at the moment. And, if the economy is really starting to hurt, if America slips into recession, and this theory that eventually things will even out and the US economy will sort of rebuild and be less burdened by debt and Doge will be successful, a streamlined, rational state, if that all works out fine. However, if middle America a year from now and the cost of eggs is more than it was now, or the cost at the pump, and things are not really great in terms of the balance sheet at the end of the month, then I think we'll see a very different situation.
And I'm also bearing in mind that actually that was his ticket to office. People thought he was going to sort out the economy. That's primarily what we were hearing, why people voted for him.
Sure, absolutely. I think that was the difference. It certainly wasn't the
The
only
only
thing,
thing,
but bread and butter issues. I think, bread and butter issues were key. Also, I think that there was a lot of people that surprisingly voted for him, whether it was African Americans or Latinos and stuff, who were kind of, rebelling against the sort of common sense stuff. So, he's got a lot of support in terms of his anti-DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion move. There's a lot of support in the United States for that, but how far he is taking it is another question.
Sure. Thank you so much for your take and your contribution. Global Fellow at the Wilson Center, Dr. Terence McMinney.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.